Hey, everybody. We had a great new week of shows at the Actors Temple Theater for my one-man show, Permission to Speak, which is on Broadway. We had some really cool people telling stories. It's an audience interactive show where people come up and tell stories from their lives, like Trudy, who's 73, lovely Jewish woman, never married. She went to Mexico on a trip, ran into John, met John, who's retired. They dated. After a few weeks, she wanted to, you know, do the deed, and he was a little hesitant. She got a hotel room with one bed. There you go. And he didn't have much of a choice. So she said, "I just want to be close to you." He got up from the bed, went into the bathroom, came out completely naked, and the magic happened. Really cool stories coming from really cool people. Hope he can make it. We got a lot more shows happening. Go to telecharge.com. Use the code PMFAN. PMFAN, you get 50% off. And we have shows this Thursday, February 20th. We have shows next week, February 24th, 25th, 26th. And they're ongoing after that. So we're doing an indefinite run. Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio on Telecharge. Now, I want to talk to you about one of my sponsors, BetDSI. I really like these guys. It's a really cool site. Listen up. I know it's an ad. They help support the show. Think about supporting them, okay? So football season's here. Are you winning much? Well, maybe you should be a Patriots fan like yours truly. Plus, you get an adorable quarterback to look at, both from the front and from the back. He's a very handsome man. That's all I'm saying. It's a win, 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 win. Well, look, if you're not winning, here's a way to double your money that's guaranteed. BetDSI is making it possible this football season when you register with the promo code PAUL100. Just use PAUL100. Okay, and you're going to get started with some extra bang for your buck. Okay, they're offering to double your money on your first deposit. So deposit to start winning. You get up to $2,500 free. $2,500. You know what you can buy for $2,500? Something that's marked $2,500. So double your money right now from the get-go when you use the promo code PAUL100. Now look, when it comes to football, BetDSI has odds on everything you could ever want or imagine. Whether it's the NFL, NCAA, MLB, NBA. Listen, they got a line right now on whether or not Stephen A. Smith talks in his sleep. Trust me, he talks in his sleep. There's no muzzle that can hold that man down, okay? Bottom line, if it's happening, BetDSI, they'll put a line on it. You know you're ready to win. Join BetDSI.com today using promo code PAUL100. You've already won by doubling your bankroll straight away. I'm doubling your money. What more do I need to do for you? Use PAUL100. That's the promo code PAUL100. Get in on the action. Get paid. Don't stand on the sidelines this season. Be in it to win it. Enjoy the game. That much more when you play it at BetDSI. All right. Enjoy my guest, Ethan Hawke. And he's got a great movie out called Blaze, starring Ben Dickey, a singer-songwriter. Really cool conversation with a four-time Oscar nominee, brilliant actor and director. And really cool conversation with these guys about their film and a lot more. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Two very special guests this week who have a really terrific movie out called Blaze, the biopic that has as its star, Ben Dickey, singer-songwriter, and co-written and directed by a four-time Oscar nominee, Ethan Hawke, and really happy to have you guys on the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated by this subject matter and, you know, as a performer myself, sort of, you know, looking at someone who is was an accomplished artist, but maybe didn't necessarily, you know, quote unquote, make it commercially. And I thought it was a really cool thing to make a picture centered around somebody like this. Was it a difficult movie to get made because it wasn't a big name person per se, who was at the center of it?
Well, I think if we tried to go about it in the normal way, it probably would have been impossible, to make a movie about someone nobody's heard of starring somebody who hasn't acted before is kind of a tough sell in your mainstream commercial market.
Right.
We didn't even try to do that. What you just said is part of why to make the movie. You know, so many virtually, we love biopics and music movies and stuff, but they're always about somebody who's famous. So invariably, they turn out to be about the trials of celebrity or something. And the subconscious of the movie is telling you that this person's life is important because, you know, they sold a ton of records, or they were a giant movie star, or they were world champion boxer, or whatever the biopic is. So the idea of making a movie about an artist who didn't find their way in the commercial marketplace seems a much more true film already, because that's the experience of 99% of the artists I know, is that they're not happy with the way they, you know, the commercial world relates to them. And so I love that. And we made it in a very renegade 70s Dennis Hopper is our spirit animal kind of way, you know? So
in the sense, it's sort of like, I know the this is based on Sybil, or at least loosely based on Sybil Rosen's book, who was his significant other. And she was also your script supervisor. So that when you say sort of renegade, you kind of, you were bare bones, so to speak, right?
Duct tape productions, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I relate to it because, you know, I'm a stand up and an actor, and I, you know, I've got some credits or whatever, but I haven't quote unquote made it commercially yet. And I don't know if I will, but I really think it's great that you're showing this subject matter and this person in this way, because, you know, it's funny, like recently I was on the road somewhere, and some of the staff from a club took me out to a bar to drink, and they said, oh, this is the guy headlining at the club. And the guy, literally the manager of the club, said to me, what have you been on? What have I seen you on? Have you been on Conan? Have you been on The Tonight? Like, literally, that's how he was defining me as a person.
That's and your metric.
And I'm sure, Ben, you know, relate to that as well, as someone who's a very accomplished performer. But there's this expectation of like, well, what are your credits? And that your value is defined based on those credits. Is that, that's got to be frustrating, right?
Well, you know, it used to be. When I was in my early 20s, I put out a record that I was dead positive was going to take me to the next level. I mean, dead positive. And I had record labels flirting with me. I had people that used to work with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers telling me the same thing. And it didn't happen. And it broke my heart. And I told myself I would never, you know, lean my soul and my heart against any expectation ever again.
Yeah.
And what started to happen was I made better art, and I paid more attention to what I intended to say, and I listened to more artists that I imagine might feel the same, and started to find out that, you know, all those credentials that somebody's asking for you at the door of some sort of perceived success don't mean a thing.
Yeah.
And they never did.
Yeah. And you end up finding
Foley to turn on, you know, 10 or 15 people in a bar in 1989, and then have that same performance turn in on thousands of people around the world.
Yeah.
Tell you that all that stuff doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. You know, when you, I was reading when Ethan talked to you about playing the part, you replied, fuck yeah. And then the electricity went through my back, and you said, I'm really supposed to do this. What did you mean by that? That I'm really supposed to do this part?
Well, I was drunk.
There you go.
So yeah, I said that the night, you know, the night that we talked about it, I said, fuck yeah, and electricity went through my bones. Because honestly, to be straight with you, I had a band that had just broken up, who had just made a record that was, people were talking about was going to be something interesting. And Ethan was talking to me about doing this on New Year's Eve. And what I really thought was happening in the moment was that he was being a good friend and trying to tell me, like, you could do this. You know, you could do anything, brother. And don't be so downtrodden. You could do anything. So when I said, fuck yeah, I was saying, like, fuck yeah, I could do it. Yeah, right on. I appreciate that, man. I could do it. But it didn't seem like a reality until about 6 months later. When he was like, listen, we got the money for this and we can't turn back.
And you're on set and someone's putting makeup on your face and you're like, holy
exactly.
shit, is this really happening?
Exactly.
You know, Ethan, you said that you wanted to, a quote of yours, I wanted to make a movie about the two wells of creativity, one with that Whitman-esque Americana, pregnancy life, and then one with narcissism, self-hatred. Why when things are good, do we fuck them up? What I feel like you made that with this, but what was it about this is what I love about what you do generally in your work and what this movie is. It's just very real. It's like, it's a real look behind what really goes on as an artist, for an artist. Why was that so important for you to make this particular kind of movie with this particular message?
You know, I asked myself that. It felt very important to me at the time. You know, you feel yourself getting older and you feel life happening. And I'd always loved movies, and I wanted, there's a rock and roll spirit to the movies that I grew up loving, whether it's Five Easy Pieces or One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest or Taxi Driver, or there was kind of sweaty pulse to those movies where it wasn't about being pretty and it wasn't about selling Michelob Light and it wasn't, you know, it was about communicating with people who might be like-minded in the universe. And I wanted to make a movie like that before I went 6 feet under once in my life, you know? Mm. And I got to do it with people I love, you know, I mean, by hook or by crook, my wife and I found a 20 when we needed it. We found it a 80s car when we needed it. Ben gave himself to this. We took a gamble on Ben, and Ben took the dare, you know, and he showed up, and, you know, so did so many people. I find that kind of weird about life is we're all kind of oppressed by how phony everything is, but then you get a chance, people love a dare.
Yeah. You know?
They love a dare to be real, and they love it to be a part of something that isn't trying to make money. They love it when it presents itself, because the great thing about being in a room when everybody's just on a dare and a wing and a prayer is you know exactly why they're there. You know, when you're selling cheeseburgers, you know everybody's there so they can do something else some other day. And that's okay. And that has its place, you know. You know, we all have to play a wedding sometime, you know. Doesn't mean you don't like the people getting married. Doesn't mean you don't do a good job. Doesn't mean you don't play your best. But it's still a wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Ben, do you think that, I mean, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, whatever, could you have played this part then, or did you have to kind of live what the life that you've lived to be able to bring? Because I didn't feel like I was watching an actor. Like, you're great. Like, I just felt like it was weird. Like, I know that this was a biopic, but in a weird way, I felt like I was watching a documentary. I mean, it was like, it's so well done. I mean, do you feel like this was sort of right place, right time for you to be able to sort of step in and play this person effectively?
I think you're right. I right place, right time. I really don't think that if it was 9 years ago, I don't think I would have been in the headspace. I don't think I would have had the discipline, the understanding, the calm, the patience, and the openness, frankly, to do something like this. The whole thing, you know, was a daydream on New Year's Eve, and then before we knew it, there was something pulling. Mm. And when more people got involved, that started pulling even harder. So yeah. All that energy that happened before we started making it and becoming friends with Sybil Rosen and connecting with Alia Shawkat and connecting with Steve Cousins, the director of photography, all those things, like, we could all feel it. I mean, it was very mysterious and continues to be mysterious. So. Yeah. I think I would have been, you know, in a full free fall if I would have tried to do something like this 9 years ago.
Yeah. And the great part of the story is you have Kris Kristofferson in the movie. And from what I saw and heard and read, that, you know, you pulled out Blaze's guitar and he signed it for you. Like, this sort of, just for both of you, that just must have been a magical moment.
Oh, God. You know, I mean, Kris, to me, I said it and I'll say it again, is the closest to Gandalf I'll ever get. I mean, to me, he holds that much power and that much weight and that much mystery and that much positivity. He is an enormous force of good. He's a best of what a human can be, and with the flaws and everything. Mm. And so he had something to say when he wanted to participate in this film. And he's an artist and he's still expressing himself, and that was enormously inspiring, on top of the fact that just get the opportunity to meet him and talk to him and share a scene with him.
Yeah.
To see that he came prepared and had something to contribute was an enormous, enormous inspiration.
So what is he trying to say today?
And
Go ahead.
Well, you'd probably have to ask him what he's trying to say. It's a very beautiful experience. You know, he had this idea about, you know, where he's at in his life and what that means to see your children when your children come visit you, when you're sick and in the hospital, and what that means. And it's a part of his life now. Mm-hmm. And he, like any artist, you know, he wanted to share the young days of getting drunk and waking up on the street, and he wants to share what it's like to be old.
Yeah.
You know, he's reaching out to the void, you know, and that's powerful. But on the more, you know, brass tacks level, there's something unbelievable. Marsha, Blaze's sister, knew Chris was coming to the set, knew what that would mean to her brother, and brought his guitar to set. Even though it's maybe two decades too late for Blaze to see it in the flesh, to have Chris sign that guitar and to watch it happen. Ben and I watched him sign it.
Yeah.
You know? And there's something healing about it. Mm. You feel, you know, when someone dies in violence, there's a vacuum that's created. And I think somehow this movie, and a lot of other things, you know, Lyle Lovett covering his songs, John Prine covering his songs, Lucinda Williams singing about him, you know, Willie and Merle, there's a great energy and pull, not just from us, to heal that vacuum and to make sense out of it. And seeing Chris sign that guitar in a mental institution in Louisiana was something spiritual that I can't quite find the words for.
Yeah, it started in sort of talking to you guys and sort of understanding more, you know, the background of this movie and how you made it and why you made it. It just feels like it went from we're going to make a piece of entertainment or art to this thing that's having this sort of spiritual, it's almost healing. It almost seems like it's closing circles. It's completing circles for different people who are involved in the project in a way.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
You know,
it's
a beautiful way to put it, man.
It does feel like that. And, you know, something that's been fascinating to both Ethan and I is that on the medical report for Blaze's death, the last thing he said was, "Don't let me die." Mm. And it's a strange thing for somebody to say that lives their life dangling over the edge of a ship's mast in ice cold water. You know, daring death at all costs and laughing at death. But it's clear now what he meant was don't let the whole experience die. Don't let the music die. Don't let these gestures of life die. Don't let this compassion and this kindness of way of being die. And Sybil Rosen did it when she wrote that book. Kevin Triplett did it when he made the documentary. Larry Munro did it in Austin, Texas, when he, you know, kept talking about Blaze and playing Blaze's music. Lost John Kasner did it when he made the tapes of the Austin Outhouse. And we did it when we made this movie. And it feels like it's a great way of putting circles or closing, and now they get released and the energy goes back out in a big way. The canyon now goes on for centuries, and that's something that's so beautiful.
What was it about him, or coming into this for both of you, you, I assume, had one perception of him or knowledge of him or understanding of him, and then what, coming out the other side, what was different about your understanding of him, or was it? Or was it pretty, did it pretty much confirm what you thought about the man and his art?
Well, I'll start and say that on the surface, Duct Tape Messiah and a lot of the most vocal stories about Blaze involve addiction and unruly behavior. And that kind of end of his life, Falstaffian figure makes a lot of noise. And as I got to know a bunch of his peers from his younger days, I see a man that I like a lot. Really soulful, intelligent seeker, you know, and by meeting the people that loved him, his shape, you know, you get a piece of the ghost from the songs, but his shape started to take place. Gerf Morlix, Sybil Rosen, Marsha, you start to see the shadow figure And I started, I liked him a lot more than I knew when I started.
Hmm. What was he, what was, and for you, Ben, was there sort of, was it an eye-opening experience in terms of learning to really understand what this guy was about by playing him and being part of the project? How did it change any view that you had of him?
Well, certainly the more you learn, the more clear someone's picture in your mind becomes. You know, life is very mysterious, and we can't prove a lot of what came before or what comes after, but there's so much to talk about and so much to be fascinated about with what's here. But Blaze Foley and his music has the power to not be here anymore and still be so influential, and influential on the people who he actually spent time with. And they, too, have influence on him, even though he's not here.
Right.
And, you know, we sat around talking about him in Sundance. You know, people keep asking us what he would think. And at the core of it, there's all sorts of funny answers around that. Depend on which Blaze you got. I mean, if he was angry, he'd probably hate it. And it goes on and on. But at the core of it, I think if Blaze Foley saw that movie, he would turn at Silver Rosen and say, I told you so. And it's not him. It's not him that he's saying it's my magic. He's saying this magic belongs to everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at what young Robert Johnson did in San Antonio in 1927, whenever it was. Do you think he knew what was to follow? Mm. And do you think all the people that played music with him at the time thought he's the one? Even though, you know, there's so many of those cats from that era who influenced so much.
Yeah.
You never know who you're going to turn on here, and you never know who you're going to turn on there. That means when you're long gone.
So was
there's something about him that seems like he knew the whole while.
Yeah, sort of he had this idea. Well, a lot of times great artists sort of see it well before everybody else does, and the world has to catch up to them, you know what I mean?
That's right.
And in a way, in this movie is almost a way of helping everybody catch up to what he kind of already knew and was living. And do you both seem to have an affinity for outlaw, you know, outlaw music, outlaw country. What is it about that? Like, is it the freedom of the outlaw aspect of it? Like what, and I know Ethan, you've called yourself a music geek, and obviously music's an important part of your life. You wrote a piece for Rolling Stone in 2009 about Kris Kristofferson that was great. You did the Seymour Bernstein doc. You know Chelsea Walls. What is it that music does for each of you, and particularly this outlaw aspect of it? Like, why is there a connection there for you guys with that?
Well, Ben, you want to answer that? I mean, I know you're asking me, but Ben speaks. He knows my heart about this better than I do.
You know, the notion of an outlaw, you know, is somebody who's either choosing to be above the law or they don't want to participate in the law that's presented to society as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Blaze Foley or Towns Van Zandt were saying they wanted to be above anything, but they did want to kick in the teeth the illusion that everything was normal.
I mean, right.
The way that things go, if you got money in the bank and you live in a house and you live your life going on, you know, the way it is, like you assume that things are good and that yours, your little community is okay. Those two guys saw injustice at high levels. They, you know, what the whole movie begins with this rant about Cesar Chavez, and it happens right now. I mean, there's kids in cages, right? I mean, the outlaw country music today that I see are people screaming about the terrible pain. I mean, it starts in our country, but it's going on all over the world. You can't just waddle down to the brunch station and have brunch and then on Monday show up to your job and go on. You got to be aware of all these things that are happening. The outlaw country music folks, while also sort of bailing out of society, were ultimately writing about the woes of the downtrodden.
Right.
And if they were making jokes and being dirty and getting drunk and getting in fights, is because they felt outraged. And that's that, I mean, that goes back to blues music. I mean,
and Woody Guthrie, right? Just, I mean, it goes back to that. It goes back to
It's not just "My Baby Left Me." You know, it's like Son House has a song. There's only "My Baby Left Me," "My Baby Yada Yada." Son House has a song where he says, "I just got a call that my baby's dead, and I got to go identify her body." Like, you know, and I just mean, like, you know, Towns wrote songs about waiting around to die.
Yeah.
You know, I can go out and get a croissant, but there's somebody considering taking their life blocks away.
Yeah.
Life is heavy and it's static and it's happening. And those cats were saying, like, man, it's not, we all are capable of merriment and joyfulness, but shit is rough, man.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm doing a show right now. I'm doing a one-man show on Broadway, and it's basically an audience show. So basically I bring audience members on stage and I let them just talk about their lives and tell stories. And the stories that you get are unbelievable. Like, I had a 29-year-old woman last night whose mother was schizophrenic, her father was bipolar, left the family when she was 9. She's had all sorts of drug issues. She's come through the other side. You look her walking down the street, she looks like your average person, right? And everybody's got a story. And people ask me, well, are these people plans? So I'm like, no. And they're like, it just literally everybody has a story. And you know, some stories are good and some aren't so good, you know, but there's a lot of life in people. And you know, I think the great thing about this film is it's sort of, it's not just, it's also not just about him, but about her. You know, I'm married and I know you guys have, you know, significant others and what they go through to help us go do what we want to do. And I think it's really nice that this sort of pays tribute to that in some way, you know, which I think is a really cool thing about the film.
Yeah. Well, you really get it, man. I mean, you know, really what you're talking about in a lot of ways is that last line of the movie, you know, "I'm sorry for your troubles, man, but everybody's got them," you know? I mean,
yeah.
Somewhere, doesn't mean your troubles aren't important. It's just somewhere in humility lies the healing, you know, and you're absolutely right. You know, it's the female point of view of these guys that makes it interesting.
Yeah.
You know, one of the problems with the outlaw country Western scene is it's, you know, it's male centric. I mean, you got a few great women carrying the torch for sure, but you know, there's a general pull to the macho, and seeing plays in this world through the eyes of Sybil Rosen, it makes it interesting, you know, to me anyway.
Oh yeah, and it just sort of just rounds it out, you know, and it makes it real. And again, it's I just keep going back to the realism of it because, you know, like, you know, there's some nights with me and my wife and whatever, you know, like either we're arguing or I'm feeling down and she's trying to make me feel better. You know what I mean? Like, it's just real. Like, it's like, it's what life is. It's not, and yet it's still very entertaining and the music is great. And, I just think you guys did a terrific job with it. And, I'm glad you put it out there.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I know you guys got to jump. I could talk to you forever, but, hey, real quick before we go, is there, could I, when I post this, we like to send it on to the people who are in it. Can I email you guys a link or anything like that? Is there a way I can get you a link to the interview and stuff when we put it up, and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I'm sure some Mary Beth or Danielle from IFC or ID would
be. Yeah, the best way is the people who hook this up is to get it to them, because then they send us everything.
Cool, man. That'd be great. All right. Well, listen, I really appreciate you guys being on. The movie is Blaze. It's out. Go see it. And Ethan Hawke and Ben, I really appreciate you guys being on, and wish you great luck with the movie. It's a really terrific film.
Thank you so much, and good luck with
it. I really enjoyed talking to you, man. It was easy talking to you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yep. Hope we can cross paths sometime. And if you come to New York, let me know. Come see my show. Yeah. Hang out.
All right, there you go. That was Ethan Hawke. Hope you enjoyed it. Along with Ben Dickey, really cool guy, singer-songwriter. Cool, cool film. I saw it. Check it out. And check me out on Broadway. We've got shows listed at telecharge.com. It's at the Actors Temple Theater in New York City. It's a one-man show. It's Broadway. Yes, I'm wearing skin-tight pants for it. All right, see you next week, everybody.